Welcome to Signs of Life, a podcast about life and literature and lots of other stuff. We're your hosts, Jen
and Elisa.
Today on episode 5, we are discussing the differences between judging and perceiving.
And before we get to that, Jen, I just have to interject this little story.
Yeah, do it.
Tonight, when I opened the door, a lizard ran over my foot. A lizard, Jen, ran over my foot. That's the story.
Is that your story? I'm really sorry.
A lizard, Jen.
Oh, that's horrible. That's horrible, Elisa.
Was on my foot.
I'm so sorry that you went through that.
Terrible. It was terrible.
You know, I have a story of my own. If that's the kind of story we're going to be telling tonight. I was asleep in bed the other night, and I've had issues with my children coming in, you know, all throughout the night recently. And as I was in bed, I have really, really vivid dreams. So I was having this dream about this cat, which had, like, come up behind me as I was sleeping. I knew I was sleeping in my dream, and this cat was, like, snuggling me in my back in the most perfect spot. I hate cats. So I felt kind of weird that I was, like, so enjoying this cuddling moment with this cat in my dream. But then I, like, woke up and realized that my 2-year-old had crawled into bed with me and was, like, sleeping in this really sweet spot against my back, and it felt really cute. But I was annoyed that my brain was like, oh, there's a cat there, because I hate cats.
Why would your brain have turned it to a cat? Have you had cats wander into your house?
No. I think I just was like, there's this really warm, cuddly
presence,
yeah, behind me, and like feeling like only cats do that. I don't know.
That is adorably hilarious.
It was really cute. But then, of course, you know, it's in the middle of the night, so I was kind of like irritated at the same time that he was out of bed. So. Cute, but irritating, you know.
Now, having your kids up in the middle of the night like that, is it different with each one of them? Because my oldest child has never been a cuddly child, so when he was younger and would be up in the middle of the night, if we allowed him to come into our bed with us, he would, like, kick and flop and squirm, and, I mean, it was terrible, and we'd have to send him back to his bed quickly because it was just irritating.
Unbearable.
Yes. Whereas my second child is, like, king of the cuddlers, and he would come in, nestle in, and immediately go back to sleep, and so there was, like, this real sweetness to it on the nights where he would show up. And my third child doesn't frequently come in. That hasn't really been a thing either way with him, and our youngest is too young to be, he's still in a crib, so.
Yeah, he can't escape.
But yeah, so they've each been different with that. Have your kids been different, or are they all kind of similar in the ways that they do or don't cuddle?
So my oldest was not a cuddler, although he does enjoy cuddling now that he's older. Mm-hmm. My daughter was definitely more of a cuddler. And when she comes in the middle of the night, which they've been in a phase where both she and my youngest come in every single night.
Really?
At different times. It's great.
That sounds great.
It's my favorite, actually. So she comes in, and she does tend to just kind of snuggle right in and go to sleep, which is really nice. And if it's at a certain time, my youngest also will go to sleep. He can be very wiggly, so he likes to come in really early in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
And flop. That's his favorite thing to do.
Flopping.
I know. So it's kind of sweet that he, like, nestled in and, like, fell asleep because that wasn't normal.
Kind of a rare treat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, but that's been my life recently, is frequent night snuggles that are really not wanted. I mean, that sounds horrible, but, you know, a really, like, solid night's sleep would be great.
Would be preferred.
Yeah.
Now, my third child number 3, who's 4, he is in a season of waking up needing to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, so he doesn't come in wanting to snuggle, but he does feel the need to cross the entirety of the house and tell me that he needs to go to the bathroom instead of just going to the bathroom. And he's right at that height and that age and everything where he just kind of, like, stands and stares at me until I wake up. Or he'll kind of, like, whisper. Like, he's trying to be respectful, but it just ends up feeling creepy every time.
It's so unsettling.
It is.
Waking up to a body
just
standing
a quiet
next to you.
Face
yes.
next to me. Staring at me.
Yeah.
Yes, so kids.
Creepy stalker behavior. That's so cute.
They're the best.
They are the best.
All right, well, that really doesn't have anything to do with judging and perceiving.
No. No, it really doesn't.
Just
it's annoying no matter
deprived.
What your preference to be awakened in the middle of the
That's
night.
That's for sure. all right, so Jen, explain to us what you mean when you say, do you mean, are you talking about people who are really judgmental and people who are really perceptive when you talk about judging and perceiving?
No, I'm not.
Oh.
No, I'm talking about the fourth letter that is used to describe the Myers-Briggs typing, the type indicator. And it basically is, I think the descriptors are really... they're not, like, great, I think, in describing...
What do you mean?
Well, so it refers to lifestyle, how you kind of extrovert, I guess, your preferences. And so if you... People hear the word judgmental. The word judgmental is really the problem, I think.
Right.
Yeah, because it implies that someone is a judgmental person.
Right. When really that J is telling us that somebody favors their... Or they extrovert their judging function,
right.
Which in Myers-Briggs we have four letters that make up our type. I'm an ISFJ. We've discussed before that Jen is either an ENFP, as we've long believed, or perhaps an ENFJ.
Right.
And so of those four letters, the middle two, the first one, N or S, tells us how we perceive the world, how we observe it.
Right,
Which we've talked about in episode one. And that third letter tells us how we make decisions, so that's our judging function, and that's a T or an F, which we've also talked about recently in episode four.
Yes.
And so that final letter, the judging and perceiving, tell us which one of those things we extrovert. Do we extrovert our perceiving function, that second letter, how we take in information, or do we extrovert our judging function, how we make decisions?
Right. But it's a little different. Well, no, you're right. You extrovert in terms of your judging function. But it gets, I think, confusing with introverts.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, for example, you are an ISFJ, but your primary cognitive function is it's an observing function.
Yeah.
And so you primarily take in information first, but then you extrovert that feeling function, which is a judging function.
Right, which if you remember from the way we've described the title of our show, Signs, S-I-N-E, we've said that I, Elisa, am the S-I, there's a lot of I's, I am an S-I. So that J in my type, ISFJ, is pointing towards the judging function, which in my case is feeling. But that means that's the function that I sort of show the world.
Right.
But because I'm an introvert, that's not actually my primary function, my dominant function. My dominant function is actually my perceiving one, which is an S. So like you said, it does get more confusing for introverts than for extroverts.
There's actually a similar-ish, although I'm sure... people who are really into it would say they're not similar at all, but there's kind of a similar-ish typing system called Socionics, and they actually they would classify you as an ISFP because they do attribute your first function as being the indicator of that last letter, yeah.
Which completely makes sense to me until we step back and look at the fact that on its own, apart from pointing to whether we extrovert our judging or our perceiving function, that J and that P kind of mean something on their own as well. Is that okay if we talk about that
now
with the J and P mean on their own? So, like you said, it has to do a bit with how you order your world. And so, generally speaking, J's tend to like things to be ordered. They like schedules. They like having a plan. Where P's, perceivers, are more adaptable, they're more comfortable with spontaneity, they may be more okay with a lack of tidiness. Those are some generalizations about those two things. And so in addition to pointing towards which functions we favor, they also tell us a little bit about how we order our worlds. And so in socionics, having that P at the end, do they look at that final letter in the same way as meaning something on its own?
They probably don't. I would need to read more about it, to be honest with you. I think it is just that they handle it differently. And in socionics, they account for all 8 cognitive functions. Because really, we do use all 8. It just, some, like in Myers-Briggs, it's more like, you know, you have shadow functions in Myers-Briggs. So it's acknowledging that you do use them. It's just how you use each of the 8 functions. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Everyone listening agree. So we just said, and we've brought it up before, that you have typed in the past as an ENFP.
Yes.
But more recently have been questioning if that was accurate and have wondered if you're actually an ENFJ. So tell us a little bit about the difference for you and your type between that final letter being a J or a P, what that would mean and why you've come to wonder if you're actually a J and not a P.
Well, you know, a lot of the tests that are available online that are free or are inexpensive to take, they're good, and I think they're really useful tools to point you in a certain direction. I just think that the questions regarding that fourth letter are so stereotypical towards one or the other and very focused on, I don't know, it feels like that the actual testing can be inadequate if you feel like maybe, I don't know, you are somewhat organized, or it's like if you're writing that line on any of the functions, that can be confusing. So if you feel like you might be extroverted, but you definitely liked some alone time, then you can be confused about your first letter. Mm-hmm. So I think there can be, the test can be really helpful for some people and confusing for other people.
Yeah.
Part of what I didn't resonate with was there was like this surface level resonating with, that I had resonating with the descriptions for ENFP that I've read. And I don't know if it's just because I'm older now that I'm starting to rethink that, but I was thinking about the primary functions, again, coming back to what those letters are pointing to. And I always thought I was a very flexible person, a very accommodating person. I like to be understanding of other people's points of view, but I also wonder how much of that is actually me being curious about other people as opposed to me wanting everybody to be validated and happy around me and creating a harmonious environment. Like, what's the actual value driving that behavior?
Right.
I'm also wonder how much like nurture plays into me not being as like regularly structured. Like, ends struggle with structure actually and routine and value.
They like out of the box thinking,
yes,
dreaming,
yes,
looking towards the future
and new kind of not like novelty. It is kind
originality
of an, yeah, it's an end thing, whether it's introverted or extroverted.
Yeah.
And so even an NJ type can be super disorganized because they're just not present in the moment in their environment. You know, they're just not, it's not, you know, stimulating to them. And so they just are not paying attention to what's going on around them.
Although many NJs are
meticulous.
Meticulous. That's a good word.
Yeah. Yeah. And we know there's a mutual friend of ours who is an INFJ, and she has a beautiful, immaculate, well-decorated home. But that's because I think that aesthetic is a value for her. Mm-hmm. I don't know that every NFJ or NJ would have that aesthetic as high up on their priority list.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it just depends on what you value deep down as an N.
Which, as a side note, is a good example of how understanding personality types does not serve to put people in boxes, because even as we can say, all right, this person's an INFJ and that person's an INFJ, we're going to see that manifest in some really unique ways.
Yeah.
With each person. We're looking for tendencies and patterns, and yet there can be big differences.
Right. Anybody looking at my life would be like, you are P100%, you know, and I don't blame them for thinking that. The more that I look at the differences between the two primary functions of the ENFP versus the ENFJ, the more I'm like, gosh, I really think I function primarily as an ENFJ. So the ENFP, we've discussed this, leads with extroverted intuition, which is actually part of our title.
Yep.
Which is an exploratory type of a function. Whereas extroverted feeling, which was part of our Life of Sife title.
Life of Sife.
That is more of a, it is a judging function in that it is values based, or, you know, the judging functions are either logic based or values based, and wanting to somehow arrange their environment to reflect either their logic or their values. And I definitely want to arrange my environment around my values.
Yeah.
Neatness is actually, it's a value that I have, but it's not at the top of my list. Mm-hmm. So I think it's what you value and what you, like your set of, you know, it can be your set of morals or social expectations, like what you think the social structure should look like.
Yeah.
And kind of holding people to those and making sure everybody's, you know, following. I think extroverted feeling is kind of seen as shallow by a lot of people.
Extroverted feeling?
Yes.
Okay, this is the second time that you've identified one of my types as
being shallow. I
know! You accuse sensors of being shallow.
I know. It's really bad. Because, yeah, introverted feeling is, it comes across as so, like, insightful and in depth, mm-hmm. and really, I think introverted feeling users do have that sense of strong self-awareness, mm-hmm. and can be very insightful. It's also very focused on how they feel personally, and it's very subjective, and it is strong. The conviction is very strong, but it's very subjective, as opposed to an extroverted feeler, which they are just really concerned with making sure everybody feels cared for.
Yeah, they value harmony.
Harmony is the word. I think I discussed that in episode
two.
Yes, mm-hmm. in episode two. So that's a big one. And then I think I sent this to you as well, but when we talk about functions, it does get really interesting. I hope we're not losing everybody as I talk about this, but how feeling and thinking actually operate together, and how extroverted feeling gets its depth from introverted thinking, that deep sense of internal logic. And introverted feeling gives extroverted thinking its depth also. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter where it is in your function stack, there's still that sense of we're all feelers, we're all thinkers,
yeah.
We all have depth of motive and all of that. So,
yeah.
Even if on the surface it doesn't appear to be.
Right.
You know, you don't understand the deep motivations that people have to do the things that they do.
Right.
So.
Interesting. Well, can we take a step back from the functions a little bit to
yes.
look at sort of the some of the basics of the J and the P?
Yeah.
So some simple questions that we can kind of attach to those letters. For instance, do you feel like you are able to relax before a job is done, or do you feel that need to finish something before being able to, like, work before play, or are you able to kind of mix that up?
That is a really good question, because I think that when I was younger, I felt like I could totally just relax. And, you know, and I don't know if that was because I didn't feel a huge sense of responsibility yet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And maybe that is a function of a person who, uses perceiving, you know, that there is that sense of the work will always be there.
Yeah.
I'm gonna enjoy this Lord of the Rings marathon. Not that I've ever done that. But, you know, it's not as urgent. You know, my husband is a really strong J. And I remember when we first got married, there was such tension because on the weekends, his form of relaxing was doing projects. I mean,
yeah.
He was like nesting almost, you know, in our home. Like, he was doing the yard and all that. And I wanted on the weekends to go to movies and just hang out and relax, you know. So there was definitely a difference there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely I think there's that sense of I was totally fine with relaxing.
Yeah, and we've mentioned this before that your husband's letters are actually similar to mine, and I identify with his perspective on the weekends. And I can possibly chalk it up to how I was raised. I do feel like my parents instilled that value of getting the work done and then, you know, not having that hanging over you and being able to move on and relax. So I could say that it's that, except it hasn't left me at all. I do think that's a part of how I'm wired, is that I really want to finish what needs to be done before moving on to the fun things. But in thinking about how we order our worlds and whether or not we're more adaptable or more structured, that can kind of play out in different ways. For instance, it can play out in our environments and whether we keep our personal space really tidy or whether it's messy, but it can also play out in whether or not we like to have a plan and a schedule or leave our options open and not plan things out too closely. And so, for instance, for me, because I'm definitely a J, I'm not borderline on that one, and yet I'm married to somebody who's a really strong P. And so I've seen for both of us ways that we've sort of made adjustments over the years of being married. And so I still feel really strongly about having my personal space tidy. Having a clean home is really important to me, and it's hard for me to even relax at all if it's not. In fact, I have found that even when I am sick, I will get up and clean. If anything, it's worse because if I'm actually confined to the couch or the bed, then I'm just looking around and seeing everything that's out of place, and I can't relax. I cannot relax if things are out of place. And so I definitely sense that need for order in my personal space. And yet when it comes to my scheduling, I have sort of let that go and embraced the beauty of spontaneity a little bit more. And some of that comes from the fact that I sort of have to be open to spontaneity because my husband is, and if I try to make a plan too far in advance, there's a good chance that something will change. And for me, a changed plan is more frustrating than not having a plan in the first place. If I don't have a plan in the first place, then I can sort of adjust as we go, whereas if I went to the time and effort to make a plan, it can be frustrating if it has to change, if that makes sense. And the fact of the matter is I've learned to really enjoy spontaneity, and so that hasn't bothered me too much.
Yeah.
Or at all, really, to kind of let that go. So I do find that my schedule reflects the J in me less than my environment does.
Yeah.
I don't know if you see that in your life. Like, you were talking about ordering logic versus feeling, and when you were talking about the functions, that order can kind of come out in different ways in that respect. But do you see that practically in your life, that you find yourself more orderly or less in certain areas than others?
Yeah. Yes. Well, and I wonder too, I've thought a lot about, like, you know, because my husband, again, is such a strong, you know, thinker, judger, and he has a really strong personality, and we even, in the way that we organize, is very different, and so there's a part of me that, the people pleaser in me, that, like, wants to, you know, organize things. I guess I'm torn. I get torn between, well, I need to organize it so I can use it, versus I need to accommodate my husband in how I organize things, and so I just wonder if the sensing and the sensing intuition component actually do affect the expression of your lifestyle more than we think it does.
Yeah.
You know, because it feels like SJ, there's a pretty strong correlation overall that
yes.
there would be organization, whereas NJs are not always like that.
Right.
The other thing is that I know lots of ISFJs. I know a lot.
We're a pretty high percentage.
You are. And, you know, a few of them, I mean, I can think of three off the top of my head that are pretty messy.
Hmm.
Now, I think messiness and your external environment is not the only way to determine. Like, you were talking about schedules and predictability. Yeah. And so those are other factors in how you approach those things. And I think that if you're an introverted judger versus an extroverted judger, you know, you there is a difference in how you primarily operate. You
yeah.
know, I feel like extroverted judgers are so easy to spot.
You can really? Just why is that? Tell.
Because they're such strong personalities, you know. They're not really the goofy, like, I feel like EPs, extroverted perceivers, are really kind of zany.
Yeah.
And kind of come across as, like, really, I guess stereotypically, they're more energetic and youthful, I guess, perhaps.
And they're maybe more likely to be the center of attention.
Yeah, an entertainer yeah. kind of type. Yeah, exactly.
EJs are the ones that are wanting to make a point of getting together with friends. And so there's that planning element to it. They're wanting to connect with people, and they're wanting to make sure that it actually happens.
Yes.
So they put themselves out there.
Well, and as our guest before this episode, you know, yeah. she is an ESTJ, and I feel like that's kind of apparent.
Yeah.
Maybe not as much. We talked about with women being thinkers, like, that we kind of tend... Not we, I'm not a thinker, but I think women feel pressure to sort of suppress that thinking function, and so maybe it's not quite as easy to identify an extroverted judging woman unless she's, like, maybe an ESFJ, because that's
right.
stereotypically or, woman.
Or you, if you're an ENFJ.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think most people... I think I'm still an ENFP.
Yeah. Although that description we just gave of being the center of attention doesn't really... I wouldn't peg you as that.
I'm not. I really, again, value harmony.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even the way that extroverted intuition operates, it just is... I don't know. I think it's hard when you're... I think the problem is that I think I was more self-aware than I actually am.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I actually stopped to think about, what do I actually want to do with this?
Yes.
You know, it's not just that I love the idea of loving ideas. Is that actually what I really, truly focus on and do?
Right.
You know, no, I don't think that's actually what I truly... I think I'm more people and relationship focused.
Well, and that's why taking those tests can be so hard, and that's not even necessarily the fault of the test. It comes down quite a bit to how well we know and understand ourselves and how we actually are versus how we wish we are, or if we're doing things because we've been trained to value those things or because that actually is a fundamental part of how we're wired to be. Understanding ourselves, knowing ourselves can be a lot more challenging than...
Yeah,
we might think. And so sometimes people take those online tests multiple times over the course of several years, and they'll say, oh, well, my type has changed. It changes each time I take the test,
yeah.
which isn't accurate. I mean, according to Jungian psychology, we are wired in a particular way, in much the same way that we're wired or predisposed to be right-handed or left-handed. We can use both of our hands. We can use our left hand and our right hand, but we're going to favor one over the other. And in the same way, we're wired in terms of our personality in these particular ways, and we use all of the functions like you were saying, but we're going to have preferences for one over another, and
yeah.
that doesn't change. Our right-handedness and left-handedness doesn't change. Our blood type doesn't change. Those things are wired into how and who we are, and our personality is the same. And so it's inaccurate to say, oh, well, each time I take the test, I'm different. You may get different results, but that doesn't mean you have fundamentally changed. It just means that it's hard to really know ourselves and understand
yeah.
our motivations and why we do what we do, and
yeah.
Because this is part of our nature. Our wiring is part of our nature, but our nurture plays a huge role in
yeah.
in how we behave and the choices that we make.
It's so true. Yeah, there's so many things that can alter the expression of those preferences.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that I think sometimes we do get stuck in our own boxes of ourselves. You know, because you've said that our wiring doesn't change, and that is true on a fundamental level. But just because you're, like, for someone who has tested as a perceiver, like, all the time, mm-hmm. you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that I have then an excuse to just act like an extreme version of a perceiver, right. Which is, you know, flaky and not being on time and not sticking to a schedule.
Yep.
Their place is a disaster, you know. It's not an excuse to then go to the extreme and say, well, this is just how I am.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really important caveat because I've seen it go both directions. People will put themselves in a box and either say, well, this is who I am and everybody needs to be okay with that. Or people will say, well, this is who I am and I'm good at some things, but I'll never be good at those things. And so sometimes people will limit themselves based on how they've tested, or they'll make excuses and justifications for how they are based on how they've tested.
Yeah.
And that's never, ever the goal with understanding these things is to limit yourself. It should be to reveal what both your strengths and your weaknesses are. And we, of course, believe that we can always build up where we're weak.
Well, yeah. And I mean, there's, like, I think a fine line between being realistic, you know, about your strengths.
Yeah.
And maybe what you would find fulfillment in doing, but there are so many reasons that you would find fulfillment in something. You know, just because you test as an ENFP doesn't mean that you're gonna love being a journalist. Like, they all say ENFPs are
really?
like journalists, and you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the case. You know, you could really find fulfillment in something really analytical, you know, like a possibly being an accountant or something. You know, it may not be in your wheelhouse, but you may love it.
Right,
so it's just
right.
Depends on, I don't know, it's good to be aware enough to where you're gonna kind of push yourself maybe in a certain direction or explore things maybe that you would not have considered.
Right.
You know, but
absolutely.
But not using it as an excuse.
Right. Never as an excuse. And not to put other people in boxes too, even I think there's so much value in understanding our children and how this affects our parenting of them. And most tests that you look at will say that you have to be careful about trying to apply the tests and the concepts to a child before they're a certain age. A lot of them will say not even until they're 16. I think a lot can become evident prior to 16 years old, but there's a really great book, which Jen maybe can talk about in just a minute, but it has to do with children of all the different types and how we parent them. And I think it is so, 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 so good. And yet I also recognize that I tested one way when I was younger. I tested as an INTJ. And I'm not an INTJ, I'm an ISFJ. I'm 100% sure that that's correct for who I am. And when I was looking at the section on the ISFJ, I thought, yes, this is all, like, I was looking at how they described children who are ISFJs, and I resonated with all of it. And then I was looking at the INTJ one, and I thought, oh, this isn't totally accurate. And I thought, man, if my parents had had this book and had, you know, said, well, she tested INTJ, so we're going to parent her the way this book says to parent an INTJ, like, that wouldn't have been a
right.
good practice, because I'm not an INTJ, and I wouldn't have responded well to the same kinds of methods that a child who is wired that way maybe would. And so in our parenting, it's really helpful to take those things into consideration while also using common sense and wisdom to
right.
recognize how our kids are and say, I mean, here you are in your mid-30s still trying to evaluate whether the type that you have for yourself is correct or not.
Yeah.
And so you wouldn't want to be treated as an absolute that you're
right.
an ENFP and you'll never be anything else if that's not actually an accurate description of who you are.
Right. Well, and we even talked about in episode one that it's good to understand things about people and maybe how they operate, but, like, even with my husband, a part of what motivated even this interest was that he and I are very different in how we process things and think about things. And so we both tested. He, you know, I kind of strong-armed him into taking it. And I was like, I think I know what you're going to be. And he was what I thought he was going to be. But then there's a tendency to be like, well, you're like this and I'm like this. And you're just thinking that way because you're a thinker-judger. He's looking at me and thinking, well, you're a perceiver. And
mm-hmm.
so you're, you know, and kind of like wondering when you can expect something different. Now, I think that's probably where, you know, grace for each other comes in. And yeah. just knowing that you can change, you can, you know, improve on weaknesses and things like that. So I think we just keep coming back to the fact that it's a tool and it's yeah. a fine line to use it well,
yeah.
you know, and to not put people in boxes. But one thing that I think is interesting is that our mutual INFJ friend, it has I would say her house is probably as clean and meticulous as your house, but it's stressful for her. It's not something that she actually enjoys doing. You know, she really looks forward to after when she can unwind
enjoy
and relax.
The fruits of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, which hopefully we can have her on sometime to even talk about.
Yeah.
To talk about that.
Well, especially since they're so rare.
It's true.
But you view cleaning very differently.
Right, right. It's a joy. Like, even the process is a joy.
Yeah. I cannot even begin to identify.
Although, if anything, I ramp it up when I'm under stress, and then I wouldn't identify it as a joy, but it's definitely a stress response to clean more. It's like a way to have control of my external environment when things inside feel tumultuous.
Yeah. Which makes total sense.
It does. And I think there are some types that go the other way. They may be tidy in their natural state, but under stress, they start to let things go.
Yeah.
And I go to kind of the opposite extreme.
Yeah. I mean, but it is in an effort to gain control.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. When things feel out of control.
Yeah. And so that probably, you know, could manifest in other ways too, other than just cleaning your environment. But that desire to create control in some, like, people tell you, like, when you're trying to clean your room, just make your bed, because it'll make you feel like things are actually under control. It's like yeah. one small thing that makes you feel like I am in control of this situation. Uh-huh. So it kind of is like a similar thought, you know, that even for a J, like, if your environment is a disaster, if you have one area, like, yeah. you're saying that you have under control, it feels yeah. like that's a place of safety and
yes.
calm and
yeah
yeah.
So for you, apart from the functions, which obviously that last letter, the J, the P, has a lot to do with that, but looking strictly at the J and the P,
yeah,
which one do you identify more with?
Just the descriptions, I would say I definitely identify with mostly with P.
Yeah, but then getting into it deeper, like we were talking about, is where you start to question that.
Yeah, because I do think, again, it's an expression of how what you're actually doing with those functions.
Yeah, I agree. You know?
So, and I've read a lot of, like, I do a lot of reading on forums and stuff, and a lot of NFJs are messy and disorganized, you know, to a degree. And, again, I think it's that end thing. You know, sensors are so aware of their environment,
yeah.
you know, and so present in the moment, and it's, you know, that idea of just wanting to be, you know, I guess present is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Whereas ends are not, they struggle to remain in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, there's always that desire to move forward into the future, or even sometimes to be dreaming about the past. And, mm-hmm. you know, so that can really affect that expression of that last letter, I think.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you're wanting to exert control over relationships as opposed to your external physical environment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, it's confusing, but really, I think when it all is said and done, for most people, I think it can be pretty cut and dry, like, whether you identify with one or the other.
Yeah. Well, I remember a while ago when I was first beginning to explore these ideas, and I was not as aware and educated on what each of the letters meant, and I was saying something about not being sure if I was an ISFP or an ISFJ, and I think, I don't know, we were having a conversation, I feel like you were there, and someone said, well, you should know if, like, most people know if they're a J or a P, like, that was kind of the one category where it was like, really, you know. in my case, as I understood it better, I was like, oh yeah, I'm totally a J. And so it's kind yeah. of interesting having these conversations with you, because where that tends to be a little more clear cut for most people, it's interesting watching you sort of kind of struggle with it almost, which one is how you identify.
I know. The only thing I'm actually really sure about is that I'm an NF.
Yeah.
That's really all I would say that I'm absolutely sure of.
Yeah, and I agree 100% on those. But yeah, you're sort of borderline on the introvert extrovert as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's all good. I mean, you know, I think it's really fun for me to think about, which is why I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, it's just, it's again coming back to the idea that it's a tool and to kind of understand some maybe basic differences, even understanding what the letters represent in your relationships with other people.
Yeah.
Like if you can look at what someone's doing and say, you know, they probably just really value, you know, this more than I do, and kind of creating that sense of empathy with other people in your relationships. Even if you don't totally know what you are or even care as much, just acknowledging the differences in preference is really helpful.
Right, absolutely. And that idea of empathy is so good. It doesn't mean that we go around telling everybody what our types are and asking them what their types
are.
You can recognize certain tendencies apart from talking about personality and type and show some grace and have some empathy.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks like we have another caller, Elisa.
Isn't it miraculous how this happens every time?
I'm just in shock right now. I feel like this is just... I mean, I keep using the word crazy because it just feels crazy.
Right. Our podcast is so popular.
we just... From the first episode.
From the very first episode. All right. Well, let's take a look at the line and see who's calling in today.
When it comes to P versus J, as much as I try to convince myself that that's a morally neutral dichotomy, I still find that in my heart of hearts, I actually think that being a J is better, is like morally superior. And I realize that that might be influenced by culture, because I think that our American culture values being a J more, but it's, on the other hand, I actually would rather live in a society, I think, that values being a J. Like, I kind of have a smugness that American society is better because we value being a J. And I'm not a J. I'm a P. And I like being a P. I like the adaptability that comes with being a P, being able to go with this flow and to not worry if plans get derailed. So I like being a P, but I was thinking, I'm not quite sure, I haven't figured out yet what it looks like to live successfully while actually embracing the P part of myself and playing to that as one of my strengths. Because it seems to me that if you are a strong P, people will like accept that about you. If you are have something like sort of brilliant to offer in return, like if you're sort of like a genius or an artistic master, then people will be like, oh, isn't it funny that like they miss appointments and they're never on time because they have so much to offer in return. Like they just respect them as like an artist or something. But for the rest of us who are just sort of mediocre people with average talents, you know, we have to act like we're J's in order to not be seen as total flakes. So I'm curious, you know, what other people think it looks like to be a P that's really embracing being a P, or, you know, if I need to just sort of continue hobbling along as like kind of a J wannabe.
Well, hey, caller, thank you for that insight. That is a really interesting observation about what our culture values and how that is reflected in what we in turn value. And it's interesting. I think she's right, Jen. I think our culture does value that J, the judging perspective a little bit more. And you can see why. I mean, if you're going to be able to get things done effectively, it's helpful to stick to schedules and have plans and all of those things that sort of stereotypically categorize or characterize a J. As a J myself, I have frequently envied P's and their ability to be adaptable and spontaneous, because one of the drawbacks of being a J is that once we have a plan, it's really, really hard to stray from it or to change course, even if the change is a good one. So surprises are terrible for most J's, and even good surprises, that's the thing. Like, my husband can come to me and say, hey, stop what you're doing, we're going to go do something fun, but even if what I'm doing is chores or something dumb or boring, and what he's presenting me with is something fun, it's really, really hard for me to change course once I've made a plan to do one thing. And I see that as a drawback, not just in how I respond to him and others, but also how I respond to people who are in need. It seems to me that the people who are quickest to drop what they're doing and go help somebody are people who are P's. Because of that adaptability, there seems to be a greater readiness to jump in when somebody's in need. And that's always frustrated me about myself, that because of my plans and my agendas, that when something comes up, it's really hard for me to let go of what I'm doing in favor of what somebody else might be needing in the moment, if there's a crisis or something like that. So I agree with our caller. I think our culture does value that J, and yet I myself, as a J, see a lot to be valued in P's, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, and that's helpful, because I think maybe even there's it's possible to kind of envy each side and see the value in what you're not. You know, you see your strengths, but then you also see your weaknesses and others who are strong in areas where you're not strong or where you struggle. You see the benefit, which is good. It's good to talk to people who are different, because then you realize, oh, actually, me being this way has benefits.
Right.
I do think it's easy for perceivers, even NT perceivers, to think that they're not as, to be a little more down, I guess, on that perceiving quality.
Yeah.
And maybe not as apt to see the benefits.
Yeah.
But even when I have a story about this, actually, because the caller brought up such interesting points about our culture valuing Jay, because I think it's totally true. I was driving. I like to go driving to de-stress, like at night. Mm-hmm. You know, if my husband's home, he travels for work sometimes, and so when he's home, it's a treat, especially if it's been a long day with the kids, and I tend to go driving to kind of unwind. And you said you went to Jamaica. And you've driven a little bit in Jamaica. You've had that experience.
I have been in a vehicle in Jamaica. I've never been behind the wheel.
It's terrifying.
Oh, it's terrifying.
It's like,
it's horrible.
It is. It is. I was on a mission trip in Jamaica, actually, in junior high, and they had us up in the mountains, so we drove that experience only on mountain roads. Yeah. So it was like, terrible. I literally thought I was going to die.
Yeah.
In junior high, when you don't think you're going to die.
No.
So
you're invincible.
Yeah. So it's really, I was thinking, you know, if I lived in a place like that, where there are no rules, truly no traffic laws or structure to that system at all, that stress relief of being able to just go for a leisurely drive would not even be available.
Ooh,
so my freedom and enjoyment in that moment is only available to me because of the structure and the rules that others have put in place.
Wow, yeah.
Isn't that, so the value of a framework, of a structure to operate out of, there's actually more freedom within that than just being, like, really, I guess, carefree and free-spirited. I mean, there's freedom in that as well, but I think even people who are free-spirited have a framework that they're operating off of if they really admit it, you know, or to really think about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, rules are seen as oppressive, and I understand why, but it was just really neat to kind of all of a sudden just, I guess, have that epiphany that, you know, that I'm only able to have that enjoyment of that activity because of the work and the upholding of that system of other people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's good to remember that even from a P perspective, that there's value in that.
Right. And the benefit of having those structures in place.
Yeah. They're important.
That's really good. I like that.
Well, so shall we transition out to
our drinks and winks?
Drinks and winks.
Yeah, we should.
Well, I went first last time, so you go first tonight. Do you have anything?
I do.
Drinks-wise.
I do. For drinks and winks, wine that I just found, and I don't even know how long it will be available, but it's a Trader Joe's bottle of wine, and it's their Growers Reserve Zinfandel, and Trader Joe's gets these reserve wines every once in a while, and they're there briefly, and then they're gone, and I'm sure they're coming from some vineyard that they have an agreement with and they're able to put their label on it for a brief period of time. So I don't really know where this came from, but they had it on display. It was $5 for the bottle and I bought it expecting very little from it. And it was actually so yummy that I went back and bought a case of it, not because I have a problem, but because economically it makes sense to have it on hand. We have people over and have parties and gatherings often enough that it's nice to have some on hand, and at $5 a bottle,
steal,
it's so good. It was worth taking advantage of it before it's gone, because I don't think they'll have it for very long. Yeah,
well, and you're sharing that with me right now.
Yes,
it is delicious.
Do you like it?
I do like it. I love that it's $5 and then I like it.
Right
So two of us give our thumbs up for that
to the Trader Joe's Growers Reserve Zinfandel.
Go get it now.
Go get it before it's gone. So that's my drink. And my wink, my recommendation, is actually also drink-related, but this one's coffee. You know, cold brew is all the rage right now when it comes to coffee.
Yes.
And everywhere you go, people have cold brew. In fact, in my husband's office, they have cold brew on tap.
I remember you telling me that.
Yeah, that's yeah. Right. So it's always available. And I can't say that I actually really have strong opinions about cold brew as compared to regular coffee or espresso drinks. I just don't have strong opinions about it. But at Starbucks right now, they have their vanilla sweet cream cold brew. And something I discovered when at Starbucks with a friend on a day where they were really busy was that she ordered an espresso drink and I ordered the cold brew, and my cold brew came out practically instantly and the espresso drink took a good 5 minutes to come out.
Oh.
Which I guess in the whole scheme of things, 5 minutes isn't very long, but when you're standing in Starbucks and sometimes they get a drink out to you so quickly, it felt like a while that we were standing there waiting.
Yeah.
And I realized that because the cold brew is on tap, it's just available as soon as you ask for it. And so my recommendation is, when you're in a hurry, cold brew is the way to go, because you're going to have to wait for a minute while they get the espresso ready, but you don't have to wait for the cold brew.
I am totally going to order that. I actually make my own cold brew, though.
Do you?
I do. It's so easy.
Well, and we have a toddy maker that my parents gave us years ago. Toddy was the brand, but it's cold brew.
It's the same thing, yeah.
Yeah, you dump a thing of grounds into this big bucket and let it sit overnight with water in it, and then it slowly filters out, and you have a pitcher of cold brew. And we'd been using that for a while before this kind of explosion of interest in cold brew.
Yeah.
But what system do you use?
It's like the same thing, only it's really jimmy-rigged together. Oh, so yeah. I just have like a pitcher of water and coffee, and I dump like a cup of coarse coffee, you know, coarsely ground coffee, and I let it sit overnight on the counter, and then I just have like one of those fine mesh strainer things and pour it through and put it in a pitcher, and it's pretty concentrated.
Yeah.
So you just kind of have to, you know, maybe use a third coffee and the rest milk or water or whatever. But it's good. It's smooth.
It is nice and smooth. I've heard that it... Well, it's funny because a lot of the cold brew that's on tap has kind of an acidy taste to it, but I never thought that when we were making it, I didn't taste that quite as strongly. And I've heard that the cold brew is supposed to extract less of the acid from the coffee bean, which is why it has that smooth taste to it.
Yeah, homemade. I've had cold brew at Starbucks, and it just, I don't know, it's just not the same. I feel like it's stronger.
But not as rich somehow. Like, it's got a little more bite to it.
Yeah, because the coffee at home, it's the same principle as a French press. You know, there's the oil from the beans still left, and it's kind of, that richer, smoother flavor. I love French press coffee, and so kind of having that cold version is really handy. Plus, if you make a big pitcher of it like that, I mean, it will literally last you all week, and you have like instant coffee all week long. So it's pretty great. It sounds fancy, and I know they sell, bottles of it at like Trader Joe's and Whole Foods, and I'm sure they sell it at like Kroger or whatever as well, but it's just so easy to make at
Yeah,
home.
I mean, that's about as basic as you can get when it comes to making coffee.
Exactly. And it's good. It's really good.
Nice.
Well, good. So I'm totally gonna order that. That sounds so good. That vanilla
And
sweet
the
cream.
vanilla sweet cream. And you know what? I get just a single pump of the sweetness in it because for me, it's overkill when they put the full amount in, which depending on your size, it's 2 or 3 pumps if you do a tall or grande, I think. I may have that proportion off, but it doesn't matter what size I'm getting. I just do the single pump. It adds just like the right amount of sweetness, and it's kind of overkill for me if it's more, but.
Is it actually cream or is it a black coffee?
No, it's creamy.
Okay, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. I think the description on their website calls it a delicate float of vanilla cream, and I feel like it's heavier than their description of it. But it is tasty
Interesting.
and it's super fast.
Okay, I'm really truly gonna get that next time. That sounds really, really good.
Yeah, do it. How about you? Winks and drink or drinks and winks?
Well, okay, so my drink recommendation is gonna be super cheesy, and I'm stealing it from a friend of ours, actually. At the regular grocery store in the alcohol section, there are these foil packets of frozen cocktails.
Classy.
So classy. And so amazing because you just put it in your freezer and you just, pull one out while you're watching, Gilmore Girls on reruns or whatever. And there are many flavors and they're not, I'm not going to sit here and say they're the most amazing things I've ever had because they're just not, but they definitely make you feel like an adult while you're watching
Huh.
whatever you're watching, and it's
Tasty enough to be worth it.
And they're
And
frozen
convenient.
and they're convenient, yes. And I don't think they're terribly expensive, although I could be wrong about that, but yeah, it's fun. I kind of am in love with them and kind of just want to have like one in the freezer at all times just to pull out, So they're really good. I just had a couple this last week. No, I didn't have a couple. I had one this last week.
Well, there you go. What flavor was
Being
it?
honest, margarita.
Nice.
That is my favorite drink.
Yeah,
The margarita,
I do know that about you.
So that was drinks for this week. I feel like I've been recommending drinks a lot, but I can't really. My most recent glass of wine is this one with you
Yes.
that we are sharing while we do our podcast.
Yeah.
If you didn't catch that on our earlier podcasts, we share a glass of wine every single time we
Well, there's two glasses
podcast.
here.
Yes.
We drink wine together. In
Yes.
that sense, we're
Sorry.
sharing.
Yes. No, we're not actually sharing. That would be weird.
Strange.
Yeah, so, and it's really good that this Trader Joe's wine that you recommended
I'm so
is a
happy.
winner, winner chicken dinner. And then as far as winks go for this week, if you are not out and about and needing that Starbucks cold brew, I would definitely recommend trying to make your own.
Yeah.
It's super easy. And if cold brew, if you feel like that is just your thing, I would definitely recommend giving it a try because it's good. And I
Yeah.
don't think you'd regret it. I mean, you may feel like you need certain equipment or whatever, like maybe you can even pour it through a paper towel or something. I mean, I don't know. You
Or a
don't.
cheesecloth or something.
Yeah, or cheesecloth strainer, like with over a strainer or something, that would
Yeah.
be fine. And you can grind it, that coarse grind, at like the grocery store, when
Yeah.
they have grinders at the grocery store,
Yeah.
if you don't own a grinder.
And do you let it
So.
sit out on your counter overnight, or do you put it in the refrigerator overnight?
It's on the counter. And I've left it anywhere from, 6 If I do a shorter amount of time, I'll actually do warm water initially just to kind of help speed up the process a little bit.
Okay.
But it's anywhere from 6 to 24 hours. I mean, it's really, it's very forgiving.
Yeah.
It's a very forgiving recipe, so.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us again. I hope that this episode has been educational. I know we went a little more in-depth with the Myers-Briggs personality stuff, but we hope you found it interesting and helpful, and we are looking forward to next time.
Yes, we are. Bye for now.
Bye for now. This episode is brought to you by Show It. Are you stuck in a boring website template? Experience true creative freedom with the drag-and-drop simplicity of a Show It website. Get started for free at showit.co.